Today in our hot seat, we have Quentin Naylor, CEO and Managing Director of THG Fluently. Hi, Quentin. Good to have you.
Hi. Great to be with you guys today.
Welcome to C-Suite Hot Seat, the show where we put C-level executives from language service providers of all sizes in the hot seat. We will ask tough questions and get inspired answers. Our hosts today are Nimbiz Inga Boonen, Chief Growth Officer, and Sarah Hickey, VP of Research.
Really good to have you here, Quentin. And yeah, in one sentence, can you tell us what it actually is that THG Fluently does?
Yeah, THG Fluently is a wholly owned entity of the Hut Group, which is a leading e-commerce platform provider. But in and of itself, THG Fluently is a traditional language services provider, providing everything from translations to interpreting across a wide variety of clients in multiple sectors.
Excellent. And you are currently the CEO and Managing Director. When you were a kid, were you already, engaging in leadership type of activities? Was this the type of career that you dreamed of? Or what was it that you wanted to become when you were a kid?
I came into this, into where I am now, through a really circuitous route, a very different life. When I was a kid, I joined of leading people in the army, and I worked hard and was selected for Sandhurst to the Officer Academy, where I left university. I then spent a year there and joined the Gurkhas, the elite Nepali regiment that exists in the British Army. I then spent the best part of 20 years there in combat roles, leading teams across Kosovo, Bosnia, Northern Ireland and Iraq and places like that. So essentially the foundation is about leading people, leading teams in challenging environments. And, you know, from there, 5 years in Goldman Sachs as a leading a large team across India, Singapore and US and Europe. And again, then found myself at THG. So THG at the time was still in very much startup mentality, acquiring lots of businesses. Acquiring both beauty brands, but also acquiring content agencies, so a studios, a hosting company, and I did, I think, 13 acquisitions with THG in a really busy period. And we got to the 13th acquisition, and it was a company called Language Connect, founder owned by Ben and Iwona Taylor, and a really fantastic traditional language services company supporting the market research sector. We thought this was a perfect match to bring in-house language services to help accelerate the brands that we owned, brands such as MyProtein look fantastic, to accelerate those brands into new international markets. So, you know, buying Language Connect in 2018 was as much for building our own brands, but also then being able to shape it to offer something really compelling to clients. And I've been doing that for the last 4.5 years now, leading Language Connect. We rebranded it to THG Fluently just at the start of the pandemic, just to align it more closely to the rest of the THG brand. But, you know, fundamentally, a lot of the core values that existed in Language Connect way back over the last, 17, 18 years still exist today. It's very much a family type of organization with a really strong bond between people who really genuinely care about language services. And it's nice that we're able to take that through the support of THG Ingenuity out to clients, whether they're commerce clients or whether they're clients who don't have any commerce requirement, in other sectors as well.
That's an amazing story. And it feels maybe that on the one hand, you kept the family values of the company, which is very important. And then maybe you brought, who knows, a more disciplined approach thanks to your background. That's just a guess.
Yes, I think, any acquisition and as you will know at NIMSY more than anyone else that, mergers and acquisitions are very common in the language services sector. And I saw my job as the post-merger integration. How do we acquire a business to ensure that the individuals, the talent that you've got in that organization, whether they're project managers or sales, or whether they're in language recruitment, can carry on doing what they do so well? Because when you buy a business, you buy the talent. Mm-hmm. You buy you don't buy a client list or a P&L, you buy the talent. So my job is helping that amazing company that we acquired navigate a new environment, but continue to do what they did so well. And so That was often when you acquire a business, you know, you strip away all those core functions, finance, HR, technology, and the people that work there are left trying to navigate in a desert and trying to get things done and trying to maintain momentum. And that's really, really very hard. And sometimes you can lose a lot of talent that way. But I saw my core job as helping sustain and retain that talent. And then once you put some investment behind it in terms of a really strong technology stack and all the support services that a really large corporate can offer you, then you can propel them to growth.
Would you like to be a tourist maybe for once? And if so, where is it that you would go to?
That's a really good question. And I had to give this some thought. I would always want to go back to Nepal. I speak Nepali from my time in the Gurkhas. I love the country, the wonderful, rich culture and the warmth. I was there back 3 years ago, visiting and hosting. I'm a trustee of a Gurkha charity. And just the warmth I felt going back there was wonderful. Above that, I do like the wilderness. So I think places I've not visited before, like New Zealand and Alaska, are a couple of places I'd really like to visit, not just because New Zealand has an incredibly rich Maori culture, but also because the incredible, beautiful scenery they've got there and a chance to enjoy that. And yeah, you know, sometimes when you're busy, really hard at it on the corporate world, a chance to disconnect and reflect in the beauty of nature, you know, is something that is really special. I mean, I spend a lot of time in France, in the Somme. Again, that's a really, really beautiful part of the world. You know, it's a place you can go to really, you know, find your zen, which sometimes in London and in these big cities is really hard.
What's the best piece of advice that you've ever been given?
Well, I've been given a lot of advice over 32 years leading teams, and some of it's been really helpful. Some of it's, you know, you learn as much from some people about how not to lead and how not to manage, as you do from others who you look at and you think, I just love the way that you do that. I think probably people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care, I think is probably one for me. Ultimately, whatever we do, whether it's finance, managing, you know, derivative trades at Goldman Sachs, whether it's, you know, leading strike operations in Iraq, or whether it's leading a language service provider in the e-commerce world, it's all about people. It's all about how you can ensure that the wonderful talent that you've got is free to give the best they can. And often businesses, corporate cultures, you know, they slow everything down. They slow people down. They remove people of hope, of ambition, of, you know, and I think if you can do your best to give people confidence, to give their best safety, to feel that they, you know, they can innovate, they can make mistakes without feeling they're going to be, they'll be punished, then, you know, it's staggering what you get out of people. And, you know, to my dying day, I'll always be about working with great people. And I, you know, the Fluently team I work with, the leadership team is largely unchanged in the last 4.5 years. So I've got some incredible experience both in sales and, you know, in operations and technology that support me. And the loyalty and genuine care. I mean, we went through the pandemic together, and I think not any business, you know, didn't find the pandemic challenging, but we all came together, and we came together in a shared adversity. And I think you emerge from things like that a whole lot stronger. Whether you come out of a difficult tour in the Middle East, in a military tour, or whether you come out of a pandemic, essentially the lessons are largely similar.
What was the biggest challenge you ever had to overcome? Because you just mentioned so much from your background, from your career in general, from the combat world going into the language services world. I'm sure there were many, but is there something you can recall throughout your career, a big challenge you overcame?
No, I think challenges that people face, whether you're leading an organization or whether you're within an organization, a lot of the challenges, they're our own challenges. They're in our own heads. They're our own barriers, our beliefs, and our strength that we can sometimes, you know, suffer self-doubt. You can suffer a crisis of confidence, or you can sometimes feel quite alone if you have a difficult decision to make. So those are the biggest challenges I face. They're actually not with anything else around me. They're actually with myself. And the best way to overcome those is to have what I always call an inner circle. They're people that you could call at midnight, right? If you call them at midnight and, or turned up at their house at midnight, it wouldn't be an issue. And they're the people who you can, you know, you can genuinely share those struggles with, and you know you're not going to get judged, but they're going to perhaps steer you in the right direction, offer some advice. So I think those are the largest challenges I've had. I think transition out to the military was hard, particularly straight into Goldman Sachs in banking. I think I'd underestimated how hard it was for me to move to an organization that had such different values, to move an organization that perhaps where, you know, you didn't fit in. You know, you kind of knew what you were worth and what you did and what your contribution was in after 20 years in the army, but coming into banking, I really didn't know that. And so the case of, you know, at the age of 40 or something like it was then, that was really, really hard. But again, good people and the confidence and faith of people supporting you is what gets you through. So, you know, have those great stakeholder networks, have those people that can support you, and have that close core of people who, when things are really hard, will help steer you in the right direction.
If you're thinking maybe, yeah, across your different careers, I guess, even as well, what are like the main lessons or some of the lessons that you've learned that maybe apply to business and career in general, or for you personally as well?
The devil's in the detail, but actually, when it comes to the business and sentiment, it's about the narrative. It's about the, you know, the story that underpins a set of numbers. So, you know, I'm incredibly well supported by a financial controller and finance team that support me with all the analysis I need, the data to underpin decisions I make. But essentially, what story are we telling? What story are we telling both upwards and outwards, but also what story are we telling downwards and inwards to the team that work for you? Just to keep everybody, you know, within the world of, you know, things are good, they're great, but they're not superb. Things are, you know, some days things are bad, but they're not catastrophic. Yeah. You know, you've got to keep people operating within a zone that they're comfortable to operate in, not in shock, not in fear. So I think, you know, mixing the numbers and the narrative is an important lesson for me, and something I wasn't particularly comfortable with. I think the value of integrating and understanding your value, business value proposition. Often I find the language services talks to itself a lot. They preach to the choir, right? They talk to each other about how great they are. And actually, as a client of that, how well do they provide a compelling argument? And a compelling argument generally should be about value. And, you know, who are we trying to convince? So it's a mixture of, you know, the triumvirate of time, cost, and quality. But each of those you need to accentuate differently with a different stakeholder at the client end. You know, and sometimes you have to be clever about that. Rather than preaching to clients, we have to partner with them. And we've got some incredibly good client relationships and partner that we genuinely partner with. And actually, it's great when they challenge us and ask us to you know, trade off different elements of time, cost, and quality. As you guys will all know, that's how this works. One thing I'm always protective of is quality, because linguists, high quality linguists cost a certain amount, right? And that's in across the industry, I'm seeing elsewhere there's a race for the bottom on price, and we endeavor to pay our linguists fairly, competitively, and give them large volumes of work that will keep them loyal and integrate them, you know, alongside our business. They're as much part of our business as our project managers and our salespeople. You know, they're core to it. So when I see this drive down on quality, I you know, it's not great for the industry. So I'm saying we protect quality. Yeah, we'll find efficiencies in workflow. We'll find efficiencies in other ways, but not by employing cheap linguists.
How would you define success for you or for your business as well?
Well, for me personally, success is not about money. It's not about achievement or anything like that. It's about a sense of contentment that that as a leader, you have enabled or changed lives for other people. I think there's nothing that makes you prouder as a leader than seeing somebody that you once hired or you once, you know, promoted or developed go on to achieve great things. It's like with your own children. There's nothing makes you prouder than seeing your own children succeed, far more than any success you might have on your own.
Throughout your career, because I feel like you're also taking a bit of a different approach, right? I feel like you're thinking a little differently maybe than the average leader in our industry as well. What was, from your own point of view, the most maybe innovative thing that you've ever done?
innovation in the language services is, you know, is you've got to keep moving forward, right? Or you're going backwards. And so, you know, I think some of the stuff that we're doing alongside THG Commerce and, you know, the e-commerce plugins we're doing are innovative, really innovative. So really looking at the end-to-end content journey, mm-hmm. From origination through localization to optimization, all the way to recycling, and bringing that all together for a client. Now, the Ingenuity proposition really is about sticking, helping a client on a super highway and providing all those services to them in a really seamless way. I think, again, when a large corporate has got lots of agencies to manage, it's very rare that those agencies talk to each other, or even rarer that data is shared between them. Yeah. And so what we're really innovating here is about what's the single thread of data about all of your content, that whether we've originated or optimized it or localized it, how's it all performing together? And that way, you know, you can provide something that's really quite game changing in the certainly in the retail e-commerce space. But I think more broadly with marketing agencies, with things like that, you can, you know, if you've got all that data, the data is the future of language services, right? We don't do this purely for betterment. We do it for, you know, in the retail space, you do it to increase basket size, to conversion, click-through rate, you know, and by really pulling that data, then actually language services can provide a much more compelling narrative when it comes to working with our clients.
Absolutely. I mean, in reality, it's all becoming about data more or less everywhere, but it's definitely very, very applicable to the language services industry. I feel like so far we talked about mostly about successes. I want to ask you about the other side of the coin as well. In such a long career as well, and a successful career, you must have had some stumbles. So can you tell us about something where either you really struggled, or I don't know, something was a big waste of time, or that you would define as a failure that you learned from, or something like that, a mistake, something that you can recall?
I failed a lot of things. I think, you know, what defines us is our ability to pick ourselves up afterwards, not necessarily that we fail. That we try is a good thing. I think when I first started at THG, I was in a role that probably, I set up THG Academy for them, but certainly when I was dealing with large workforces in fulfillment centers, I really didn't have the experience to do that. And I really struggled to forecast demand across a large warehouse. And I think, you know, the impact was felt very much on Black Friday, and it led to a very, very difficult period for me. And actually learned that there are, you know, as a leader, the best thing to do is surround yourselves with people who are really great and then get out of the way. So find yourself a really strong workforce planner. Don't try and be the hero here, but find somebody who's much better at understanding that. Similarly, when I was a young officer, I did really badly on a particular course, and it was a real wake-up call for me that I needed to grow up, I needed to focus, I needed to stop being so arrogant, and learn some real humility. And I think you know, humility is what I think, you know, you're only as good as you'd like the sales, right? You're only as good as your last quarter. You know, you finish a quarter feeling really great, and then day one of the next quarter, you're rubbish until you've proven yourself okay. So having that humility means that when you can celebrate success, but also you can contextualize, you know, when things don't go your way.
What advice would you give to young entrepreneurs who are starting their own business in the language industry today?
I've got, you know, immense respect for those who are entrepreneurs, who have the courage and foresight to go and find something. I think, you know, the advice I would give would be do it now. You know, there's always a reason not to do something, but go and do it now. Whatever it is, have a strong value proposition. Be able to tell your story very clearly. You know, you can't be everything to everybody, but be something to somebody. You know, find either a sector or a product or a niche target that you are going to own, and you're going to be the authority upon, and then put everything you've got behind that. You know, a small language service provider isn't going to compete with RWS, SDL, Lionbridge, you know, but it is going to provide something that's very different. What we provide is for Fluently clients is something that they can't get elsewhere. is a level of expertise within the market research sector, for example, that, you know, is based on 18 years of supporting that sector. And that's what you get. That's what you get when you come to Fluently. You may get a lower price somewhere else. You might get better technology somewhere else. But actually what you want is people who understand your client target better than anyone else. So that way you can anticipate, you can solve problems, you can think of new and different ways for the client to do things. And that's a genuine partnership. But go ahead and find something to do and just do it now.
Excellent.
I love that advice. And thank you so much, Quentin, for this conversation. It was great to have you in the hot seat. I don't believe we made you sweat too much.
Not at
you
all.
Did that
no, right.
in your past.
It's been great. It's been great to chat to you all.
If anyone else feels like letting off some steam and you're part of the C-suite at a company in the language services or technology industry, do sign up with us if you dare to sit in our hot seat.
And for the viewers, this was it for today. Thank you so much for watching. And look out for the next episode that will be published as a video on Multilingual TV and as a podcast on the NIMSY website.